Good morning and welcome to the Walk Off, everybody. I'm Scott Belford, joined as always by the best co-host in the biz, Adam Mack. And here we are, buddy, May 3rd. We have turned the page on April, and I think most Jays fans will agree with good fucking riddance. 15-17 after a really rough start to the season. And I mean, listen, I know perspective is everything. 15-17 truly isn't the end of the world. This team is still very much in it, I guess, you know? But man, oh man, watching this team has been a chore. It's been one of the more difficult, I think most Jays fans will say that we just love watching baseball. But man, this brand of baseball, it's just not very fun. So this is, I'm saying this as like reality. And I think most people have this sentiment about the state of the current Jays. We are going to try and put a positive spin on this episode. I know there's a lack of positivity in Jays Nation right now. I know after mailbag on Tuesday, dude, I've never had DMs and comments on our stuff like this. And there's two sides. There's one side that was very much like, yes, things are dire. There are some major, major decisions to be made if this team continues to go down this road. And then there's the other side who is pretty much like you. The one comment that stood out to me, and I'm going to say right now, yeah, I was triggered. Okay. Somehow this commenter managed to find the chink in my armor and managed to just twist that knife. All right. But he was like, you guys are supposed to, this is how much it bothered me. I
Okay.
actually remember the comment. All right. He's like,
Memorized it.
you guys are supposed to be fans. Now you're all jumping off the bandwagon, blow it up, trade this guy, trade that guy, and blah, 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 always reciting the same old opinions. And I actually, being the mature 42-year-old adult that I am, went right back on there and I'm like, I'm a bigger fan than you are. Nana, nana, boo, boo. Right? I'm
Amazing.
like, our opinions are fresh as fuck. And then, very mature response.
Well, I would say just the fact that the podcast is now 4 years old, and for 3 years,
Yes.
we have been like Ross Atkins apologists,
Yes.
and this team is great, and the window, and all of that.
Yes.
So the fact that we are even like entertaining a retool or a rebuild is the
Yeah.
freshest opinion we could have. It's the opposite of old stick a deer, old fucking. Anyways, yeah, I'm triggered.
Yeah,
Well
no, and
done.
it's funny,
It's
and we were talking about this just before we hit record for the public. But honestly, buddy, calling us bandwagon jumpers, like that is the one that, like, and I know I'm being completely immature about this, and you're not supposed to get too deep into the negative comments, but I'm just like, bandwagon jumper, I've watched this team suck for more than you've probably been alive, whoever you are. Like,
Right.
like we sat, Adam, you and I watched the Toronto Blue Jays from 2000 to 2013. Like, think about that. This was like the hopeless era of Blue Jays. This was the Gord Ashe into JP Ricciardi era, like literally the darkest of dark times, all right? And for someone to like question my loyalty to the team because I feel like I'm being a realist. You know, like the truth is, dude, it feels a little delusional to look at this team, put rose-colored glasses on, be like, never trade Vlad, never trade Bo. We've talked about this. Dude, if they're not going to re-sign, if they are not going to re-sign, they have to trade him.
I have to.
They
I
have to
agree.
trade him. And I know
I agree.
you're almost at the point where, like, maybe this team just isn't good enough. We should trade them. But that's not jumping off the bandwagon. That's understanding.
That's me rooting for the team. It's like I'm a Montreal Canadiens fan, and there's nothing worse than for a decade of recent watching of hockey, I've watched the Canadiens finish like one spot out of the playoffs or two spots out of, like, just finish fucking last and let's go get Connor Bedard. Like,
yes.
Come on, you know, like let's rebuild and like let's actually do it. We're just fucking suffering by barely missing out and like, yeah, let's go get some fucking young talent again because I want to keep cheering for this team. With all that being said, we got a lot to get to here on the walk-off Orioles edition because our new team is booming.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Exactly, exactly. Well, I mean, you said it on Tuesday, right? Like, yeah, you love Bo. You love Vladdy. But you're not a die-hard Vladdy and Bo fan.
The only thing I love more than those two is the Blue Jays. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, I just want to see this team succeed. And if it's with Bo and Vlad, fucking A.
Yeah. But like, I'm not going to be cheering for Bo in a Dodgers jersey. I'm just not.
No.
I'm just not. So if he's leaving for LA in free agency, at least give me something back. And again, pushback of like, oh, we're not going to get a haul for him. We're only going to get two or three prospects. He's not Juan Soto. Fucking be realistic. Sure. Okay. Whatever. Yeah. Somewhere in the middle is reality. Whatever it is better than a compensatory
compensation.
Draft pick.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
yeah.
Like,
okay. Whatever. So we got that out.
Toxic positivity time.
Toxic positivity all time. Right. We are going to get into the Jays and the Royals, which obviously, there might be a little negativity there. Then we're going to do three studs and a dud.
Might be some negativity there.
We're going to do Circle of Trust. This is our first Circle of Trust of the year.
Hey.
And then we'll also do the Circle of Rust. And we'll talk everything in between. The offense stinks. I know we just talked about toxic positivity, but literally this is just the reality of what we just went through in April. All right. This is a team that scored an average of 3.5 runs a game. That's like, literally that's a hockey stat.
Yeah. I just realized our offense is only outscoring the Oakland Athletics of Sacramento
and
the Chicago White Sox. That's it. That's the list.
That's the list.
I knew we were bad, but I thought we were like bottom 10 bad. You know, like below average, but like for a playoff team, our offense sucked.
Yeah.
This is gross.
Yes, it is. And I mean, I will say the only good thing with this offense is there's no way it can get worse. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. There is no way. I mean, I'm probably taunting the baseball gods here, but it just feels like this has got to be rock bottom, right? Like this is as low as you can go. This was the worst April in Toronto Blue Jays history. This is one of the worst months in Toronto Blue Jays history. And it's like a top 50 worst month in baseball history. So, if you're a frustrated Toronto Blue Jays fan, you're a normal human being. Nothing is more normal than being frustrated with this offense. Speaking of offense, the topic that we will get to after that is just 40 home run hitters and the fact that maybe us Blue Jays fans have been a little spoiled over the last decade when it comes to the kind of power we have seen out of this team. And home runs are exciting. It's funny. We were getting so many home runs that there was a portion of the fan base, myself even included, that were saying things like, you know what? The Cleveland Guardians brand of baseball is kind of fun to watch. If we were winning a little more, maybe that would be the way to go, right? And now here we are. And I'm like, oh my God, how do Guardians fans deal with this? And then finally, we'll touch on the Blue Jays and the National Series, formerly the Montreal Expos. So there was some really fun Jays Expos series back in the day. They used to do the Canada Day face-off, which was always cool. So we'll reminisce a little bit about that and set up that series. And on that, we will get into the Jays and Royals. Lost that series, one win. And I will start with the Tuesday game. I know you didn't watch the Tuesday game, Adam, but it was the first game in weeks where I was watching it. And you know that little excitement when a good game is happening, right? You get it like right there, right? Right there. You're like, you're in it. And you feel like they're going to win. And that was the first time I'd felt that like excitement, that fun of watching baseball in so long. Jays won 6-5. It was still a tight game, but they scored 6 runs. And they scored 6 runs for the first time since April 5th, which is makes sense. That's how you score an average of 3.5 runs a game. You don't score over 6 very often, right? That just messes with your numbers. So they have it in them to be an exciting baseball team. But man, the rest of those games, of those games were tough to watch, dude.
It's been 25 runs over the last 10 games. That's 2.5 runs a game. And like you said, that's with a couple of 5s and 6s mixed in there. So
this is me trying my best. This is me scraping the bottom of the barrel to come up with positive points, okay? So the positive points I had was Tuesday's game was actually a lot of fun to watch. Danny Jansen is swinging it, and he's wearing hand protection. It's a double whammy for Jano. Yes. Protect those hands at all costs, Danny. We need you, man. Like, watching a guy with some opposite field power, it feels like a fever dream, kind of. That's how rarely we see it. And Jano hit another dinger on Wednesday, providing the only offense of the day of a 6-1 loss. The other positive I have here, starting pitching has still been very good. All right. Chris Bassett pitched. Honestly, Chris Bassett, you got to feel for the guy on Wednesday. There was a moment where the camera flashes to him on the mound after in the sixth inning after allowing some runs. And he's devastated. He's beside himself because he knows giving up 3 runs, you're pretty much going to lose the
probably
game.
Lost.
Like, talk about the pressure and the meat grinder this team is putting this pitching staff through. It feels completely unfair.
Yeah, I mean, how much longer can this go? Like, remember when Alek Manoah struggled last year and we just went with a 4-man pitching rotation? And then eventually, I think it was Chris Bassett started making comments publicly about, like, we got to go get someone. Like, you can't, we can't just keep pitching on short rest all season. Like, this isn't sustainable, right? Like, at what point does a guy like Chris Bassett or Gossman or whoever just be like, we're fucking really good pitchers and you guys are fucking killing us here, man. Like,
yeah.
You should be able to pitch 6 innings, give up 3 runs and be like, all right, not my best.
We're still
start,
in it.
But like, yeah, got a shot. Like, we're I gave my team it. A shot. Yeah. You know, one of my worst outings of the year, gave my team a shot. You should be able to say that. And it's not. It's like, no, and, we're fucking bringing Nate Pearson because we're just going to save innings now from our good bullpen pitchers.
I mean, okay. So, number one, back off Nate a little. Nate Pearson has been very good over the last couple weeks, and he's actually impressed me. We will get into this when we're talking circle of trust, circle of rust.
Sure.
While you're talking pitching and the crunch we're in, Yariel Rodriguez just last week was put on the 15-day IL with tightness in his side. Bad news, although if there's any silver lining to this injury, it's that he couldn't have timed it at a better point. Okay, so this is our schedule in the month of May. And off day yesterday, series against the Nationals, off day Monday, 2-game series against the Phillies, off day Thursday, 3-game series against Minnesota, 3-game series against Baltimore, off day Thursday, the 16th. So what that means is that basically they only need one game filled in for, and that's this Sunday, which Yariel Rodriguez is lined up to pitch. He's not going to, but I think we're going to see Alek Manoah. And I know we've had a lot of talk about Alek Manoah and how he fits into the future plans. What a disappointment his trying to get right season has been. He just finished a outing in Buffalo where he was lights out, man. Yep. He was literally lights out.
He looked good, and that's what we want to see.
He looked really good. He was up against the best pitching prospect in all of baseball in Paul Skeens and went literally pitch for pitch with him. So you know what? A little bit of hope there that the big cat can come back and provide some depth. Listen, I don't need Alek Manoah to be the stud he was in 2022. Would that be nice if he finds it again? Hell yeah, it would be. But can he come in on Sunday and provide five innings and give up two runs? I hope so. I mean, I don't want to get too negative here, but like we've seen what this offense is doing, so we kind of need him to do that.
If he can pitch five and give up two runs and our bullpen can shut it down, we have a shot at winning by half a run.
That's right.
That's what else could you ask for?
That's the math. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, that is some good news when it comes to when Yariel got injured. Obviously, really a bummer that Yariel Rodriguez was out at all, right? Because he's had himself a really good start to his major league career. It's been really quite impressive what the kid has done. 26-year-old Cuban, never pitched in the major leagues before. In his first few starts, 11.2 innings pitched, 13 hits allowed, 15 Ks, 5 walks. Is it amazing? No. But is it a pretty good debut? And definitely gave this team a chance to win in those two games. Yeah. And you know what? His last game before needing to go on the IL also looked pretty darn good. So is there hope that Yariel Rodriguez comes back and is just fine, jumps right back in? Absolutely there is. It's tightness in his side. It's not arm related. This is why they shut him down in the spring, though. So there is a little concern there. But hopefully it's just a little inflammation and some muscle pain. And you give him those 15 days off and he's back in the rotation doing what he was doing before. So that is the dream. Anything to add? On one last thing to touch on this Royals and this April before we kind of move forward and you can take over with three studs and a dud here. This is Chris Black, who is an analytics whiz. And he says, Warren's mentioning regarding Jay's slow start offensively. No team has faced more top 10 or top 5 pitching so far this season. If there was a metric that measured quality of every pitch of a team faced, I think the Jays would be near the top. Is this a good excuse? No. Every single team is going to face good pitching at some point in the season. We just wound up facing it all in April. With the offense this team has had, it's actually impressive. They're only two games under 500. And finally, before we move on to three studs and a dud, I will say the Arizona Diamondbacks last year were two games under 500 close to the end of April. If you want a Blue Jays example, shit, the 2015 Toronto Blue Jays were two games under 500 when the trade deadline happened and Anthopoulos went all in and brought in David Price and Troy Tulowitzki and Ben Revere, and the list goes on and on of... We all know about the 2015 deadline, but you know what? The Jays have kept their head above water, which is just the most important thing here. Do I believe in this offense? Do I believe that they have it within them to still be a wild card team? I don't know.
Well, okay. Like in honor of toxic positivity, I will say, looking at the standings here, the Jays have had one of the tougher schedules in baseball. I'm looking at their record versus teams above 500. We're 8-11.
Yeah.
Not ideal, but consider we're 32 games into the season and basically 20 of them, so 2/3, have been against teams over 500. And then you look at the Yankees record. Guess what the Yankees record is against teams over 500?
The Yankees are below 500. I think you muted yourself.
Sorry, they're splitting, but they're 5-5. Oh, yeah. which means they've only played 10 games against teams above 500. Like, in 30 games, we've played two-thirds against, let's call them good teams, and the Yankees have played two-thirds against bad teams. So the fact that we're only 5 games back and we've played an extra 10 games against tougher teams, I guess that's all you can, all I can hang my hat on in terms of like hope that like, okay, yeah, like, I mean, obviously you wish for a better record against good teams.
Good teams.
You like to obviously be able to hang with the Astros and the Dodgers and whatever, right? And I know, don't get me started on the Astros if they're a good team or not. I still think they are. But yeah, maybe when you go, okay, we're like a little under 500 and the Orioles and the Yankees are like almost 10 games over 500. That feels like, oh, they're sure running away with it. But
well, honestly, dude, if you take a look at the May schedule, there is a real opportunity to make hay here for the Jays. They play the Nationals, they play the Twins, they play the Rays. I know the Rays are kind of our Achilles heel, but they are a below 500 team right now. They play the White Sox 6 times. They play Detroit 4 times. They have a series at the end of the month against the Pirates. I know the Pirates started hot. They're a below 500 team right now. So there is opportunity here. I know that we're also a below 500 team here, right? So it's a little bit of a double-edged sword. And there are some teams that are probably going to correct the ship. The Pirates might be one of them. But there is an opportunity here.
To be honest, there's probably a few of those teams who are – the fan base has their mouths watering, saying, well, at least we got 6 games against the Jays coming up.
Yeah, that's right. So White Sox are like, bring on Toronto. Okay, 3 studs and a dud. This is a segment that we have done for the 2023 season, and it was requested that we bring it back, and it's a fun little segment, so we're going to, and that's exactly where we're at right now. Adam, take it away, my dude. 3 studs and a dud.
Stud number 1, pretty easy, Danny Jansen. 3 home runs in 4 games. 308 batting average. OPS 1.438. Very good, Danny Jansen. All he does is mash. When he's healthy.
Yeah.
All he does is mash.
And I know people get tired of me bringing this up. And they argue and they say it's bullshit because you need to really, Danny Jansen just hasn't been a healthy man when it comes to playing baseball. So you really, to get his 162 sample size, you're going over like 2.5 years pretty much. But, but his power numbers line up pretty close with Marcus Semien and what Semien does. And I know that rubs people the wrong way when I say that, but Danny Jansen can hit. Danny Jansen has opposite power, opposite field power, like almost no one else on this team has, maybe minus Davis Schneider. Him in the lineup and healthy every game is going to do wonders for this team. Obviously, he's going to be splitting the time pretty evenly with Alejandro Kirk, who has become the best pitcher in baseball at stealing strikes. He's a framing master. So we've got a defensive stalwart. We've got a guy with power. It's a good mix at catcher. We just need Danny to be able to continue to go out there and take at bats. And thank the Lord above, he's finally gotten the message about protecting that hand. And I love Danny so much because he has this mental block about batting gloves. He just feels he can't hit with them on. So he's had this specially created equipment where he still doesn't need to wear gloves. And I'm all for it.
If Vladdy gave you a season this year, or any year, with a 244 batting average, an OPS plus of 131 and 35 home runs,
yes,
how would you feel about that?
I'd feel great.
That's what Danny Jansen's given us over the last 162 games. I mean, again, literally, as the joke goes, it's taken him 3 seasons to get that far, to get that many. I mean, this is early in this season, but 72 games, 86 games, 10 games. It's
I do I do think that there is something to even be said about momentum and being able to stay in the game, right? So, like, is it possible that there's even more in the tank with Danny if he can just stay on the field long enough for us to see it? Arguments to be made there.
Arguments we made there, yeah, I don't know.
But I don't need more out of Danny. I just need him in the lineup. You know what I mean? Like, just be healthy. I'll take the 35 home runs.
I mean, that's it's a glass half full, glass half empty way of looking at it, right? Like, you can either gripe that Danny Jansen doesn't play enough, or you can at least hang your hat on the fact that when he's in the lineup, he's going to contribute.
Yes.
At least for the last 4 years, it's been that way. Like, and when he's got a bat in his hand, he's going to swing it.
And any offensive production you get out of your catcher is a bonus, right?
Totally.
Like, there's so few teams out there that are getting production from the catching position when it comes to at-bats. So the fact that we have a guy on this team who can produce offense like Jano does, I mean, already ahead of the curve.
Ahead of the curve there. Honorable mention this week, by the way, Alejandro Kirk. Two games, did hit a home run, had a .429 mm-hmm. batting average in limited action. So, again, not a stud this week, but I
worth
do
mentioning.
Ride him pretty hard. And he played as good as you could hope for when he was active. So, there you go. Stud number two, Gary Gossman. I think that was our lone win against the Dodgers?
Yes.
At the end of that series. Seven innings, two earned runs. Gary Gossman is, after a slow start to the season,
mm-hmm.
which we know he had his injury time at the end of spring training, which kind of set
his shut down,
ramp
yeah.
up back. So if this is now he's in midseason form and we're going to just get seven innings of two-run ball for the next 30 starts, I'm thrilled.
Yes, please.
So,
yeah, yes, that. Please.
Zero walks, five strikeouts for Gary Gossman. Very good. Also, stud number three, Jose Berríos. Didn't get the win, but he did pitch seven innings, two earned runs.
Yeah. I mean, if we had to pick a stud for the month of April, it's probably Jose Berríos.
Yeah. For sure. Also honorable mention, last one here, some positivity, Davis Schneider,
mm-hmm.
353 batting average and an OPS of 892. I did not expect him to continue to be a contributing member to this team this year. I thought last year was a little bit of a aberration, and I've been pleasantly surprised by Davis Schneider so far this year.
I've been pleasantly surprised that he's forced his way into the lineup most days. You know, like, I really did feel like Davis Schneider was going to be a big contributor to this team if given the opportunity, but I was very doubtful that John Schneider was going to full on give that opportunity. And he's kind of forced John's hand a little bit here, where despite whatever the front office and analytics are telling him, you know, they're probably even like, well, analytically, Davis Schneider has to be in this lineup. So good for Davis for pushing and forcing that hand. And totally. I said this at the beginning of the year. I really do believe Davis Schneider is going to hit over 20 home runs this year if he's given the opportunity to play 120 games. So he's kind of on pace for that. Fingers crossed that he continues to put up the numbers he is, because he has been a real godsend to the middle of this lineup, despite the fact no one else seems to be getting on base or doing much production. So,
I don't want to quite give him honorable mention status, but I do want to acknowledge Vladdy had a good week. Didn't hit any dingers, which is the only thing keeping me from giving him an honorable mention, but he hit 304 this week in a 751 mm-hmm. OPS. Like, it's good to see, because we got other guys at the top of the lineup who I would fucking go bananas if they had a 304 batting average with zero home runs, and we'll get to mm-hmm. those. But Vlad, step in the right direction. Wish to see that power return, but It is what it is. Vlad, good offensive week with a 304 batting average. I'll take it. Dud of the week. Boba Shett. Yeah. He's a struggle. Am I worried about him season long? No. I still think he'll end the year like with a close to 300 batting average. Like, I bet you he's 290, 295 by the end of the year. It's just, it's unfortunate.
Man, it is really skewering this top of the lineup, though, because, man, it's the old adage, right? You don't know what you have till it's gone. And that has been Boba Shett to a T this season. This top of the lineup is a big reason why this team is scoring 3.5 runs a game so far this season. They just haven't been producing. And when you have three black holes at the top of your lineup, it is going to be incredibly difficult to be an offensive team in any sense of the word. So can Bo get right in May? He freaking better. And you know what? I think that the pressure is really starting to pile on him. And I don't know what maybe some of these days off is what this team needs, right? You know, like they got a day off yesterday. There's a day off Monday, another day off Thursday. They're playing some weaker teams. Yes, I know Philadelphia is a good team, but you know, if you can go in and take care of business against the Nationals, you know, split that Philly series, if they can go 4-1 in these five games, I know that's a big ask and you got to really show up. But and if they can do that and also have a little bit of offensive firepower and build that confidence a little bit, maybe Bo has a big series in there and it rights the ship. This is how baseball goes. We're all, if you watch baseball for any amount of time, you know how streaky of a sport it is. This has just been a streak that has carried on longer than any time in Bo's career. And it is hurting the team.
Yeah, truly is. At what point do you start to worry about him for the year?
Like, I'm a little worried now.
This is okay. This is where we're at, and as it's May 3rd, we're basically 20% of the way through the year. Right, we're a fifth of the way through. I'm like at the end of my rope for saying, well, it's still early. Right? Like,
and honestly, I believe that. You know what? I know how many people get really frustrated hearing it's early. But in April, it is early.
Yeah, like I think we can say that this week. Like today we can say, looking back at the numbers, it's early, and we can say that excuse. But like by next Friday,
no.
It's now not it's, early yeah. anymore. Now we're in the middle of the season.
Let's get right.
So, Boba Shett, I'm not worried yet, but I'm getting close. So I'm on the same page as you.
Yeah.
Dalton By Varsho, the way. Oh, go ahead.
I just want to say this to avoid some angry comments. I'm well aware, and so is Adam, that games mean as much in April as they do in September. Okay. Well aware. Mm-hmm. When I say it's early, I just mean that
when Matt Chapman is hitting 11 home runs in April and you're already putting his name on the All-Star ballot in pen, remember, it's early. That's all we're saying.
Just works both ways, exactly.
Works both ways. Dalton Varsho back down to earth. Dishonorable mention this week.
Okay. Yeah.
0.59 batting average. He went 1-17 with 5 strikeouts against 3 walks.
Yeah, that Royal series, he really struggled.
Like, man, he got hot. I mean, home runs come in bunches. We know that. But, like, let's get back to reality. He needs to start bunting every single at bat.
Honestly, Adam, you know what I think part of Dalton Varsho's problem is right now? Is that he's not a number 3 hitter in a lineup. And with this top of the order struggling like they have, John Schneider has put him into the top of the order a couple times, and he's just not that guy, right? Like, I love Dalton Varsho, and I think in the 5 or 6 hole, that's perfect. That's where he should slot into a lineup. The pressure's off a little bit. It allows him to come to the plate with guys on base. It allows him to play to his skill set, which is, am I going to drop down a bunt? down on a left-handed pitcher down the first baseline? Am I going to swing for the fences? You know, because he's one of the fastest guys on this team. He's the best guy with the bat when it comes to laying down a bunt. And he's still leading this team in home runs. So he has the most power. Like, Dalton Varsho, it is. But Dalton Varsho has been the bright spot of April. I mean, we said Berríos was the stud of April. And Dalton Varsho is probably a top three in there as well.
Yep, I'd say so.
And Bo has probably been the dud of April. Like,
yeah, that's true. Definitely the case for Bud, for Bo. I would say one of the things that frustrates me with this roster construction is, remember a couple years ago when it was like all righties? We're like, this is not a balanced lineup. We need more lefties. But then, like, we have more lefties, but they're all bottom of the order lefties.
Yeah.
Like, all the argument for, oh, you need a lefty. Like, the pitcher can just get in a groove when he's just throwing to righties.
Yeah.
But it's like, okay, so we go righty, 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 and then we go lefty, righty to end the line. Like, it's just the value add of, like, having a lefty in there to get a guy off his rhythm is only helping Isaiah Kiner-Falefa in the 7 spot. You know, like, being sandwiched between 6 and 8 as lefties in Kiermaier and Varsho. Like,
and that's the thing.
You need a guy like an actual power swinging lefty who can go and hit number two.
Kyle Schwarber.
Sure. I mean, I was thinking Juan Soto, but yeah, Kyle Schwarber, like, whatever.
I'm just, you know, yeah, like, it's just a great example, right?
If we went out and spent a buttload of money on Kyle Schwarber or whatever, but he was our number two or three hitter, and you go, okay, we got George and Bo, and then a lefty, and then Vladdy. You go, okay, that's the value of having a lefty. To mix that up, right? Like, but to just have lefties in the 6 and 8 spot or the 7 and 9 spot, it fucking drives me nuts to have Kevin Biggio and Kevin Kiermaier as our lefties.
Yeah. No, I agree. And you know what? Kyle Schwarber hits under 200. He strikes out a pile. But you know what he does do? Man, does he ever provide protection at the top of that lineup for the righties around him. Because despite his batting average, despite his strikeout rate, the guy's going to hit 40-plus home runs every single year. This is something we are going to get into. We'll talk circle of trust first. But, like, the lack of 40-run hitters, home run hitters on this team over the last few years is pretty apparent. And it does go to show you what that superpower bat. You know, like, you're a power bat at 30, you're a superpower bat at 40. But what that superpower bat provides just has really been one of the big things that this team has lacked.
There's just no one in our order right now that puts any fear in the opponent pitcher. Like, even Vlad is like, yeah, I'm not worried about throwing. Vlad can't hit fastballs anymore. He used to, like, make hay on, like, anyways, that's... I'm gonna spoil.
We'll get into pitching.
Can I just ask a question here first?
Please.
I mean, we acknowledge the fact that the Jays offensively are bad, right? What was it, bottom three in the league?
Mm-hmm.
I keep hearing that. Oh, defensive run saved. The Jays are, you know, Gold Glove team in the AL East, and we're the best defensive team in baseball, and are. You know, I'll be the first one to tout how good our pitching staff is.
Mm-hmm. Right?
But then I look at, like,
no, I know.
Our runs allowed.
The numbers don't back that up this year at all.
We're bottom 10 in runs allowed.
Yeah.
Like, we're not fucking scoring and we're letting people score on us. Like,
yeah.
It's not a good combination. Yeah. We're like, you want to just, again, okay, sure. Like, I will acknowledge we've had a tough schedule, sure. But also, like, if we're 4 games under 500 at the end of May, I think, like,
don't say it, but I know exactly. Yeah.
Right?
No, you're right. So, you're right.
And especially with how, like you said, how easy our schedule is. We got the White Sox and the A's and, you know, Twins and Guardians are kind of, you know, frisky and whatever, but, like, we're not playing the Dodgers. I mean, we do have a matchup against the Orioles. So that's our first time seeing them.
Yeah.
But This is we've got to be above 500 by the end of May, don't we?
They have to. I mean, in my opinion, dude, they better be five games above 500 at the end of May. Or we're in serious trouble.
As it stands right now, Orioles and Yankees are both on pace for 100 wins.
So are the Guardians.
Jays are on pace for 75.
Yes.
So just when we like put things in the frame of like, is this an 87 win team? Is this, can we get to 90 wins? Like
right now,
we're talking about changing the pace we're on by 15 wins over the next 130 games. Like that's, it's not like undoable.
No,
but like we got a fucking long way to go. Astros should be panicking if May isn't good. Jays should be panicking if May isn't good.
Yeah.
So we're digging a hole.
Yeah. Couldn't agree more. And on that, let's get into Circle of Trust. Who in the bullpen do you trust? Because I have three guys right now, and I know you're going to hate my last guy, but I've got at number one, Jimmy Garcia. Pretty tough to argue with what he has done so far. He has a few blemishes, but honestly, I don't even blame Garcia for his blemishes. He's been overworked, and John Schneider hasn't given him every opportunity to succeed. It's not on John Schneider because the rest of the bullpen has kind of put him in an awkward situation. But Jimmy Garcia, number one. I still believe in Jordan Romano. He is in my circle of trust. Back from injury. He's already picked up a few saves. Jordan Romano is going to be fine. Mm-hmm. We already know who Jordan Romano is. He's Grant Fuhr. All right. And then finally in my circle of trust is Nate Pearson. Wow. Now, I wish to bring some numbers up before you get too upset. Now, right now, as we talk, okay, Nate Pearson sits at a 4.09 ERA. However, okay, three runs were scored. He pitched on Wednesday. He allowed three hits and three runs. And his ERA before that game, before May 1st, so in April, he finished with a 1.8 ERA. Now, I know ERA is not the best stat for relievers, but his whip has been 1.55, but before
this most recent game.
Before his most recent game, it was 1.12. So, Nate Pearson has really been a shutdown reliever this season. Does he make me nervous? Yes. Do I remember his past blowups? Tough to forget. But I think he's done enough to, for the most part, feel pretty good when he comes in. He's worked a lot on his slider. He's got those secondary pitches hitting the strike zone for the first time in his career. And he's still got that big 101 mile an hour fastball. So Nate Pearson is in my circle of trust. My circle of rust is going to be Eric Swanson and Tim Mayza. Tim Mayza is getting close to coming out of that circle of rust into the, I call it the in-betweeners. Tim Mayza has had some decent outings the last few times that he's pitched. There's also been a few times where he's gotten out of some situations where like the ball has gone deep and an extra couple feet and it's a dinger instead of an out. Mm-hmm. But that aside, Tim Mayza is starting to put it together. Eric Swanson's had a rough go to the start of the season. We'll all remember he was shut down early. Came off the injured list with Jordan Romano in the first week of April. And then on top of that, I mean, I can't even imagine dealing with the stress, the anxiety, the frustration of having your little boy in the hospital in the scenario that he had it happen. And great to see Toby Swanson healthy and up and going, and kids are so resilient, but you can't tell me that that didn't mentally affect him pretty substantially. So I expect a lot more out of Eric Swanson in May. And then for my list of the in-betweeners, I have Trevor Richards and Hennessy Cabrera. I just about had Hennessy in circle of trust, but I need a little bit more out of him.
That's fair. That's fair. No, I'm surprised Nate Pearson is as low on your list, but when I look at the numbers and I hear what you say, I buy it.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised that Nate Pearson is as high on your list as you've got him. I think there was like a 4-game stretch in the middle of April there against like the Yankees and the Padres and whatever, where he seemed like he was struggling with control, couldn't hit the zone, and had quite a few. Like, I think against the Padres, one outing, he had like 3 walks. So I think that is tarnishing my view, maybe. But yeah, when you look at the rest of the games, I mean, other than Jimmy Garcia, who's pitched 2 extra innings, he's got more strikeouts than anybody else in this bullpen.
Mm-hmm.
With 13. So.
And Jimmy Garcia, dude, he's hitting 100 this year. Like,
yeah.
He's a bad man. He's a bad, bad man.
Bad, bad man. Yep. All right. Love it. I'm good. I like that.
Okay. Sounds good. We'll also touch on the fact Bowden Francis just last week was put on the IL. They brought up Brandon Little to kind of fill that long relief mode. Hopefully they don't need to use Little too much, as I like Brandon Little. Great AAA guy. We'll leave it at that. And then finally, the corresponding move when they put Yariel on the IL was bringing Zach Pop up. We'll see how that goes. We all know Zach Pop, Canadian kid. We know what he does. And we just fingers crossed that he looks a lot more like he did at the beginning of last season than he did after his injury, where he just really couldn't find the strike zone again and was struggling with control. All right. We will move on to the fact that this offense has been historically bad for the Blue Jays in April. So I will read this. We're not going to spend too much time on this because we have been, I feel like we've been moderately positive here, turning the page on April and having some hope for May. We're playing some weaker teams. There's chance to make hay. Things are looking rosier, but we will touch on April here one last time. The Blue Jays, 3.47 runs per game. That is 28th in Major League Baseball. They have a WRC plus with runners in scoring position of 68. That is 30th. That is dead last in all of baseball. They have 110 WRC plus with the bases empty, which is 6th in Major League Baseball. What an embarrassing juxtaposition that is. When there's zero pressure and nothing to think about, the Jays are actually pretty good. If there's any positive to take from that, it does show they can do it.
Do you think that's why the Jays don't steal bases at all? Because they're like, whoa, we don't want runners in scoring position. That'll just get in our hitter's head.
Don't
leave them on first.
This
team doesn't steal, by the way. That was one thing I was looking at for like our offensive struggles this week. Zero stolen base attempts this past week.
But that's the thing, dude.
Like, not caught stealing and not successfully stealing. We're just...
You know why that is?
Why?
Dalton Varsho, Kevin Biggio have been ice cold the last week. And they're our biggest base stealing threats. So, Ernie Clement hasn't played as much. He's another guy with some wheels. But, I mean, if he's not in the lineup, how do you get on base? Yeah, stolen bases. And, I mean, we went through this last year, right, buddy? Where we were like, they were so bad on the base path, we were almost begging to just like, play station to station, please stop running. So I don't know. Maybe it's not a bad thing. They overall, so it doesn't matter, runners on, runners off, however it is, the full WRC plus, 96, and they're 18th in all of baseball. So this is a lineup that is grossly underperformed. Can they improve on that? You would hope so. I mean, if they don't improve on this team... we might get nasty messages for this, but this team's going to have to sell at the deadline. Like, if this is a 75-win team, this team sells at the trade deadline. This isn't me being a bandwagon jumper or like, it's just reality. if Bo and Vlad aren't going to re-sign, and this team is a 75-win team, they're selling at the deadline.
Okay, I have two points on that. First of all, we have the seventh worst run differential in baseball. Like, we're with the White Sox and the Rockies and the Athletics. That's the category we're in. Like, like we just got to stop being delusional about this team. Like, I think there is, like, some fans and, like, okay, you're not a bandwagon fan. I get it. But, like, if you think that, like, the romance of Bo and Vlad in 2021 is, like, still here with this team, like, I'm jealous of you. That must be a nice world to live in, but it's not reality because...
No.
And, like, whatever, Bo and Vlad might turn it around and, like, sure and whatever, and I'm hoping for that. But also...
Yeah, of course.
It's, like, just this what this team is actually producing is not good. And my second note is when it comes to the, like, if Bo and Vlad sign, or if we're able to sign them, here's my concern with even doing that. And this is, like, where I'm going to throw some shit on Ross Atkins. Hasn't been able to build a good team while he's had the best version of Bo and Vlad for basically free.
Yeah.
Hasn't been able to build... a good team or a good enough team around them. So when he's got a $400 million anchor financially on those two, how good of a team do I think that he can build when he doesn't have the financial flexibility to go spend on Gausman and to go spend on Springer? And, you know, like, what's this team going to look like? I don't know, because the farm system's also pretty shallow right now.
It is.
So
now, I mean, there are some bright spots. Aroldis Martinez is putting up major power and hitting around 300 in Buffalo. And I mean, he is 22. And the worst part about Aroldis Martinez is that his defense just straight up isn't major league ready. It just straight up is not a major league caliber defender yet. His bat plays, and this is one thing that I touched on really quickly, and we'll say it again. If, for some crazy reason, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is not a part of the future for this team, maybe you move Aroldis to first.
Yeah, like, sure.
You know?
Yeah. I'm not opposed to it. Like,
We don't need another second baseman in this team.
Don't need another second baseman. I will say this for Aroldis, though, is... This 2024 team, I think, is proving that, like, all the defensive runs saved metrics and stuff are kind of fucking bullshit because it doesn't matter. Like, give me fucking Kyle Schwarber in right field over Kevin Kiermaier. Like, I just want a guy who can hit 40 home runs and is maybe a liability defensively.
Like, we don't need to be so extreme, I think, is what a lot of this is, too. Like, the Jays were so offensively minded. And, I mean, we all remember 2021. Good Lord, the defensive gaffes were tough to take at times. And there were bonehead moves all over the field. And then they swung so far the other way. And it worked last year. Like, it did work last year. They won the Gold Glove for the team. There were a bunch of different Gold Glove candidates and winners. Where did it get us? Got us 89 wins and being swept in the wild card by the Twins, who were then dealt their own sweep the next series, right? So I don't know, man. I sure would love to see a happy medium. I think Dalton Varsho in center field would have been a great play where you're kind of bringing – I know there's all these rumors that, like, Teoscar came out and said the Jays came out and even said to him, don't forget about us, and they just couldn't come to the deal that Teoscar wanted. I don't know what the solution is here outside of you look at the way baseball has always operated and you have a power hitter at third, you have a power hitter at first, and your corner outfielders hit for power or at least are offensive players. That just hasn't been the case. Okay, speaking of power, I think this is the perfect transition into 40 home runs. Man, it has been since 2021 that this team has had a 40 home run hitter. Of course, they had two that year with Marcus Semien breaking the record for most home runs by a second baseman in all of Major League Baseball, banging out. I think it was 45 that year. I need to double check. 48 for Vladdy. He led the league in home runs, tied with Sal Perez that year. Second in MVP voting. We all know about Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s 2021. 2022, not as good. Vladdy led the league or led the team in home runs with 32. And then last year, he led the team with 26. Is there a 30 home run hitter on this team right now? If there is, it's going to be close. Dalton Varsho's sort of on pace for that. I think if you break down the numbers, he's supposed to hit 28 if he continues at the pace he's doing. This team had so much power over the last 10 years. I mean, we all remember Edwin, Jose, and Josh in the middle of this 2-3-4. And I think in 2015, Edwin hit 39, Jose hit 44, and Josh hit 42, right? Like, I know Edwin didn't quite hit 40. He hit 40 the next year. But, like, you know, you start grading it out there. We had three 40 home run hitters. Even when Vlad hit 48. Everyone talks about the minor league parks. It was a mirage. Well, I've said this before. I mean, look at the numbers. It wasn't a mirage. Even if you take eight of those home runs off, saying it's a minor league park. But if you just look at the distance he hit these home runs, for the most part, they were home runs. Yeah, there's some where you can scratch them off. So let's scratch off eight. He's still a 40 home run hitter, right?
Yep.
Will he ever do it again? I don't know. I can't remember anyone being more in his own head than Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is, or that's my guess what it is. I think if anyone knew what the problem with Vladdy was, it would already be on the track of being fixed. Anyways, all of this to say, I want power, man. Can we have one guy who you look at and you're like, yeah, he's going to a down season's 35. Like Kyle Schwarber. By the way, I don't want Kyle Schwarber. I just keep using him as an example. We're playing the Phillies in a few games here, and he is like the perfect example of a guy who, like, that's his skill set, right? You talk about five-tool players. Well, Kyle Schwarber has one tool, but my God, is that a sharp tool. He's going to hit bombs, and he's going to hit bombs all season long.
Yeah, it's it does feel like unlikely that any point this season Vlad is the kind of hitter where a pitcher goes, maybe we just walk him, you know, like, like, okay, we got an open base on first, and I'd rather pitch to Dalton Varsho. Maybe let's put Vlad on base. Like, I just don't think Vlad at any point this season is going to be that threatening. Like,
especially with Justin Turner hitting like he has, hitting behind him. Like, why are you walking Vlad to get to the one guy hitting? Like,
right. So you know, every time we play the Yankees, I worry about that with like Aaron Judge and now Juan Soto, right? Like, I haven't really ever felt that way about Stanton, and maybe I should. I'm just not a believer in Stanton, but
yeah, anymore. Anyways, he was an incredible talent when he played for the Marlins and the first couple years with the Yankees, but he can't stay healthy. He's slow as all get out. He's
even behind when Judge most fastballs. Is slumping and having a bad run. I still feel like
scared.
Oh, it's the ninth inning and we're up one and there's a runner on base and now fucking Aaron Judge is coming up. Like, Jesus Christ. Yeah. And I used to feel that way about Vlad. We're like, okay, we're down three, but we got the top of the order coming up. Like, if Springer and Bo can get on, and then we got fucking Vladdy. Like, this is what I dreamt about as a kid, was moments like this, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just...
Hasn't been that way.
It's too bad.
All right, buddy. Let's wrap this up with just touching on this series that the Jays are going into today. Just a reminder to everybody that today's game is on Apple TV.
Gross.
Yeah. So a little tougher to watch for most. First game, Yusei Kikuchi versus Patrick Corbin. Steal the Albatross contract on that Washington Nationals. He's the only one really making money there. Kevin Gausman lines up against Jake Irvin tomorrow afternoon. And then on Sunday, versus Mackenzie Gore. But my guess is Alek Manoah is going to get the call. So we'll see how that goes. Washington Nationals, formerly the Montreal Expos. So I wanted to ask you, the grounds crew, who was your favorite Montreal Expo when they were still in Montreal? I know that they had some pretty incredible players come through Montreal. Dennis Martinez with his perfect game, Pedro Martinez, Randy Johnson, Vladimir Guerrero, Larry Walker, Hall of Famer. You know, like the Montreal Expos had some incredible players, Moises Alou. So please drop in the comments. We're going to do a little segment on Mailbag about everybody's favorite Montreal Expo. I know that when the Jays and the Expos, they first broke down the barrier and started interleague play, it was a very exciting time for Canadians, and they'd always line up that Jays versus the Expos series on Canada Day, which was always a ton of fun. And I remember as a kid just being so excited for the Canada Day series. So let's reminisce on Mailbag about it. Feel free to drop in the comments your favorite Montreal Expo, and we'll dig in. This is going
Anthony
to
Telford.
Anthony Telford, perhaps. So my favorite Montreal Expo, and I would be shocked if anyone else had this as their pick, but Mike Lansing, former second baseman for them. There was just something about the way the guy played the game as an 11-year-old. I loved Mike Lansing. So feel free to, again, drop in the comments who your favorite Expo was. Did you have a favorite Expo?
Yeah, it's Vlad Senior.
Yeah. Yeah. Tough not to be. Yeah. Awesome. All right.
Sorry. This just reminds me of one of my favorite stories of Vlad Senior of all time. It was Roy Halladay's Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame induction. And he talked about pitching to Vlad Senior, and the strategy was to just, what was it? I fucking forget it. Why did I forget it? It's something like this: the plan for getting him out was walk him and then throw him out at first. But the hard part was throwing him four balls he wouldn't swing at. Something along those lines. I might be butchering that.
Yeah, like, oh, no, that's great. Great. Yeah, I love that. It's like the A&W commercial from a couple of years ago when Vladdy's at the plate, and there's one that the A&W guy is throwing it, right? And it like bounces, and Vladdy's like, throw a strike. And then his dad's like, I would have swung at that.
Yeah, I have hit a home run off of one of those pitches a couple of times. Yeah. So yeah, Vlad Senior's an absolute stud. So there you go.
Wasn't he? Expos. Yeah. Cool. Hall of Famer. Yeah, very much so. Missed the Expos. Thank you very much, everybody, for following along with us. Hopefully there was some toxic positivity there for you. We tried our best, I swear to God. Yeah. Go Blue Jays. It's a new month. It is a new day, all right? May is here.
Not early anymore. Hay.
It's not early anymore. Time to start piling on the wins. Take care, everybody. Thank you very much, Grounds Crew. And
shout out to Barb and Gord.
Shout out to Barb and Gord. Yes, absolutely. Also, by the way, Long Toss is happening on Sunday, 6 to 8 Eastern after the game. And we hope everyone joins us on YouTube Live. Thanks very much, everybody. Cheers.